So Psalm 39, the psalmist is facing death. Having a lovely time this morning. He tries to restrain himself but can't, and he bursts into a cry to Yahweh for respite. It's a tragic reflection on the human condition. The tension is not resolved and the reflection is indecisive. Its key theme is expressed in the refrain, I've translated it, we human beings are no more than a mere breath. We human beings is actually, the Hebrew is Adam. So you could say man, as long as you mean man in the inclusive sense, which of course it is in our language. The word for breath, by the way, is Hebel in Hebrew, which is the name of Abel in the story of Cain and Abel. The names are symbolic. Cain means smithy. He's the city person in their days, you know. And Hebel means breath, puff of wind, a breath. Because Abel's only there for a couple of verses and gone. So here, Adam and Abel are both in the one sentence. Man, inclusively, is no more than a mere breath. Or, as I've translated, we human beings. Which Adam is plural, it's humanity. It has a certain affinity with the book of Kohelet, also called Ecclesiastes. Kohelet is the Hebrew name, and it means the preacher. Kahal is the assembly. The Kohelet is the one at the assembly who does the preaching. And of course, in Latin, ecclesia is the assembly, and ecclesiastes is the preacher. So you're dealing with either the Hebrew or Latin word. It's the same book in the Bible, depending on what Bible you've got. Well, in that book, Kohelet, chapter 9, verse 5, we read, the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no more reward, even the memory of them is lost. And the same theme is found in another couple of Psalms. Psalm 62, verse 9 reads, those of low estate are but a breath. Those of high estate are a delusion. In the balances, they go up. Together, they're lighter than a breath, a hebel. Put everybody, no matter what powerful or rich or mighty or just the ordinary humble people, stick them all together on a balance and they all go up. There's nothing much, in other words, to any of us. And Psalm 144:4, human beings are like a breath. Their passing, their days are like a passing shadow. So let's look at Psalm 39 and reflect on it and go back to it if you should wish later. I said to myself, verse 1, I'll keep watch over my conduct so as not to sin with my tongue. New Year's resolution that any of us could take. I'll keep a muzzle on my mouth. Have you ever said that? Has anyone ever said it to you? Perhaps zip might be the word we'd use. But I'll keep a zip on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence. There's a good reply. If someone tells you to zip up, say to them, I'll keep a zip on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence. Okay. I was silent, says our author. I was resigned. I contained myself, but to no avail. My distress grew worse. My heart kept burning within me. While I was talking to myself, the fire blazed and I couldn't hold my tongue any longer. Well, well, well. And you shouldn't repress these things, should you? So there we are. It all burst out. A humorous, in a way, beginning to our psalm. Jeremiah 20, verse 9 is a little similar. If I say I won't mention him or speak any more in his name, then within me there's something like a burning fire shut up in my bones. I'm weary holding it in and I cannot. This is the prophet speaking. Even though everything Jeremiah said nobody liked, because he kept saying, look, you've got to change your behavior. And the city could be destroyed. And just because it's God's temple doesn't mean it'll be here forever. He had a very hard job as a prophet. And every time he spoke out, everybody laughed at him. So he said, I'm not going to say anymore, but the word of God kept exploding every time he got into the pulpit. Okay, so that's our psalm. Let's begin it. Yahweh, he prays, let me know my end, the measure of my years, that I may know how fleeting my life is. You've given me only a short span of life. My days are nothing in your sight. And then comes the refrain, we human beings last no longer than a mere breath. And then comes the Selah, meaning, I presume, having said that, the music takes over. And we live with that meditation for a few moments. I'll read to you from the book of Sirach, which you may know. That's sometimes called Ecclesiasticus. Don't mix it up with Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiasticus is the Latin adjective meaning the book of the church, which it was called in the early centuries because they didn't have any moral theology books, and that was where they went to get kind of proverbs and moral wisdom and so on. But the author is a man called Jesus, the son of Sirach. So it's often called Sirach, a wisdom book from the second century before Christ. Whatever comes from earth returns to earth. So the ungodly go from curse to destruction. The human body is a fleeting thing. And Psalm 90, verse 10, the days of our life are 70 years. Perhaps 80 if we're strong. Even then their span is only toil and trouble. They're soon gone and we fly away. And from the book of Wisdom, chapter 2, verse 1 to 5. Hope you don't mind me delaying on this mood with you, but that's what the prayer is about. It's the author of the Book of Wisdom, which was the last book of the Old Testament, the Greek Old Testament, written just before the time of Jesus, probably in the late 1st century BC, and hot off the press at the time of Jesus. And Paul seems to have known of it in his writings. So here it reads anyhow. They reasoned unsoundly, says our author. They, saying to themselves, short and sorrowful is our life. There's no remedy when a life comes to an end. No one has been known to return from Hades. We were born by mere chance. And hereafter we shall be as though we'd never been, for the breath in our nostrils is smoke. Reason is a spark kindled by the beating of our hearts, and when it's extinguished, the body will turn to ashes. And the spirit will dissolve like empty air. Our name will be forgotten in time, and no one will remember our works. Our life will pass away like the traces of a cloud, and be scattered like mist that is dispersed by the rays of the sun and overcome by its heat. For our allotted time is the passing of a shadow, and there's no return from our death, because it is sealed up and no one turns back. The Book of Wisdom, that's chapter 2, says that's unsound reasoning, because the Book of Wisdom has picked up the Greek idea, not the Jewish idea of the resurrection of the body. That doesn't occur in the Book of Wisdom, but they've picked up Plato and the kind of Greek idea about the immortality of the soul. So they'll go on to develop the idea that we don't, death is not the end of our soul. They make the distinction, as the Greeks do, between soul and body. The Hebrews didn't make that distinction. So the wisdom will go on to another view, which is still not as beautiful as that of Jesus, but philosophically pretty good. The book of Sirach again, and this is the last one. Hard work, this is chapter 40, hard work was created for everyone. A heavy yoke is laid on the children of Adam from the day they came forth from their mother's womb until the day they returned to the mother of all the living. Mother Earth, huh? Perplexities and fear of heart are theirs, and anxious thought of the day of their death. Psalm 6 now, verse 6 of our psalm, after that meditation goes on, I will pass away like a shadow. We worry over nothing. We amass possessions, but who for? Now the rest of the psalm, after having reflected on that, the rest of the psalm focuses on sin and punishment. And we find a reflection followed by a request, by a further reflection, a further request, and concluding with a reflection. So it's a philosophical psalm, moving backwards and forwards from prayer to reflection. Once again, we're confronted by a dilemma. And the dilemma we'll come to see in a moment is, do I speak to God? Do I speak with God? Do I remain silent? And the tension remains throughout the psalm. Is it a matter of acceptance or resignation? These are all real questions, aren't they? So our psalmist, 2,000 so many hundred years ago, is reflecting on these profound questions that touch us all. So, verse 7. So what am I waiting for, he asks. Lord, my hope is in you. Free me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of the fool. I'm silent. I do not open my mouth. Since it is you who have done it, turn away from me your stroke. I'm worn down by the blows of your hand. You chastise us in our guilt, consuming like a moth what is dear to us. And once again, the refrain, we human beings are no more than a mere breath. It's quite poetic, isn't it? Verse 12. Hear my prayer, Yahweh. Attend to my cry. Don't be deaf to my tears. For I am your guest, a stranger passing by, like all who have gone before me. Turn your gaze away from me. Give me the breath of life before I depart and am no more. He's not happy that God's looking at him, because God, while he thinks of him, the process of dying might go on. Whereas if God gets distracted with something else, he might forget about me and I might stay alive for a bit longer. That's the prayer. It's quite simple and lovely. So, some more Job. Are you enjoying this poetry? If the content isn't so easy, the poetry's lovely. So you've got two pages now of Job to give the same feeling, because it's a common human one. Here's Job chapter 7, the whole of chapter 7 pretty well, from verse 6. My days, says Job, are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, come to their end without hope. Remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never again see good. The eye that beholds me will see me no more. While your eyes are upon me, I shall be gone. As the cloud fades and vanishes, so those who go down to Sheol do not come up. They return no more to their houses, nor do their places know them anymore. Therefore, says Job, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Am I the sea or the dragon that you set a guard over me? When I say, my bed will comfort me, my couch will ease my complaint, then you scare me with dreams and terrify me with visions. So that I would choose strangling and death rather than this body. I loathe my life, says Job. I wouldn't live forever. Let me alone. My days are a breath. What are human beings that you make so much of them? That you set your mind on them and visit them every morning and test them every moment? Will you not look away from me for a while? Let me alone till I swallow my spittle? If I sin, what do I do to you, you watcher of humanity? Why have you made me your target? Why have I become a burden to you? Why not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now I shall lie in the earth. You will seek me, but I will be no more. And just two more passages from Job that pick up the mood of this psalm quite beautifully. Job chapter 10, verse 20 reads, are not the days of my life few? Let me alone that I may find a little comfort before I go never to return to the land of gloom and deep darkness. And finally, from Job chapter 14. A mortal born of woman, few of days and full of trouble, comes up like a flower and withers, flees like a shadow and does not last. Do you fix your eyes on such a one? Do you bring me into judgment with you? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? No one can. Since their days are determined and the number of their months is known to you, you've appointed the bounds that they cannot pass. Look away from them and desist, that they may enjoy like laborers their days. It's rather nice that Jesus came and gave us another view of God. And I will come and take you to myself, and you will be with me, and where I am, I want you there to be there too, you know. I won't leave you orphans. I will give you my spirit to be with you and journey with you. It's so different. This is really understandable, very human stuff here. But the answer to this cry is Jesus and the man on the cross. And the New Testament is so beautiful. So praying the psalm as a Christian, we remember that Jesus, like Abel, died prematurely. And like the psalmist, Jesus did not open his mouth. And Jesus, too, cried out that the cup might pass him away. However, Jesus placed his hope in God, knowing in faith that he was passing from this world to the Father. I think that last statement is really important. I find it important. Please don't presume that Jesus knew everything, saw everything, had a divine brain. God doesn't have a brain, you see. God doesn't have thoughts. God is beyond all this. God doesn't have reasoning. God doesn't know in what we mean by know. I'm using careful language, but I hope I'm... In other words, all our thoughts about God are just, they're just metaphors. They're just reaching out for something. And we're choosing the best words we can. So Jesus, as man, the only brain he had was a human brain. That's all he could have. The only thoughts he had were human thoughts. The only feelings he had were human feelings. So there's nothing in Jesus beyond reading Job and understanding Job and having the same feelings. But in faith, not sight, but faith, Jesus knew God was love and put his total trust in it. And the resurrection is the proof that Jesus' trust was rightly placed. And that's why the church just blossomed after that, because they realized that what Jesus had said about God was actually true. And that's the meaning of the resurrection for us as Christians, and why it's so vital to us.